Today on Focus on the Family, we have a real treat for you. You're invited to sit back and enjoy some humorous insights about marriage from comedian John Branion.
You know, you got to have your driver's license renewed every 4 years, but you don't have to have your marriage license renewed ever.
Well, I'd never thought of it that way before, and welcome to the program. Your host is Focus President Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, I think we'll all be saying that a lot in the next half hour. You know, laughter is a great way for us to get over some of the discomforts of everyday life, and our guest, John Branion, will help us laugh at our own marriages as he opens up about his. And he has a lot to share. He's speaking from 30 years of experience in his marriage to his wife, Lori, plus 4 children. So that's got to bring some great laughter.
I'm looking forward to it. This audio is from John's DVD called Wedlocked, and I'll explain the visuals for you. John is at an office of the Department of Motor Vehicles.
No!
And he's sitting next to a rather quiet stranger, and he's musing aloud about marriage. And you'll hear the other man respond once or twice. And here now, John Branion on Focus on the Family.
You know, I've been married for 21 years, same person. And I think that the secret to a long-term relationship is flexibility, adaptation. You got to pretty much bend with the wind or it'll just knock you flat. Because it's always in a state of flux. It's always changing. I mean, after 21 years, she's not the same girl that I married. The relationship is a lot more intense. She asks me questions. Questions that I don't know the answers to. Because they are questions that no man has ever known the answers to. Deep, probing, impossible questions.
What are you thinking?
I'm a guy. I'm thinking nothing. Zero, zilch, zip, nada, nothing. She's a girl. Girls cannot think nothing. That never happens. When her mind is blank, there's still billions of calculations flying through it. Angles being considered, thoughts being processed and organized, colors being coordinated. She's like a 4 gigahertz, 256 terabyte file-serving computer. I'm like that little solar calculator that comes free with cigarettes. And I still spend time with other guys. You know, me and the guys go out, we talk. Never once have I ever said, "Hey, Al, what you thinking?" Because I don't care. And plus, he's a guy. I know what he's thinking. Nothing. I've never been a belonger. High school, it was that way growing up, all the way through high school. The car I drove in high school was a brown Chevy Vega. 2 doors and 3 speeds. And that was a chick magnet. And girls would say things to me, you know, to try to make me feel better. You know how girls do. They'd say stuff to boost my spirits, try to let me down easy. It's like a ton of bricks. Oh, I care about you, John. I care about you. I think about you like a brother. So I had no girlfriends in high school, but I had more sisters than the Catholic Church. And then a couple of years after graduation, this miracle, along came Lori. Along came this girl, and she said, "I love you. I really love you." I should have been suspicious right there. I should have known I was in over my head, and we started planning the wedding. Planning the wedding. We had to have a wedding rehearsal. That's what she told me. Gotta have a wedding rehearsal, John. I'm like, why? Is it tricky? She goes, yes, it's tricky. Let me show you my part. We rehearsed this over and over again. Let me show you my part in the wedding. By the 6th time, I had it down. I don't mind rehearsing. I just just wish we'd practice something. There were so many things I needed practice on. There were so many things I didn't know how to do. Still don't know how to do them. Consequently, 20 years later, I could have used practice on 1,000 things. I could have used practice dropping off to sleep at night with a pair of sub-zero feet in my back. You have frostbitten my kidneys. I could have used practice standing in the women's clothing department in front of the dressing room door, holding her purse, trying to hang on to a shred of masculine dignity. And even getting used to each other, just occupying the same sleeping space at the same time, that's what's difficult, getting used to each other's nuances. She's a morning person. The sun barely breaks over the horizon. She's hovering over the bed.
Looks like we had the sun's up! The sky is blue, the birds are singing, it's going to be a great day, it's time to get up, up.
You know what I would rather hear at 6 o'clock in the morning? Everyone on the ground, this is a stick-up. Because at least the stick-up guys will let you lay down. The birds are singing. That is the only sound that they know how to make. You know what I think? I think one bird gets up early, and the noise outside the window is all the other birds going, "Shut up!" And even climbing into bed together, occupying the same sleeping space takes... Now, she's my wife. I love her. But there are still times when I will climb into bed next to her. I pull her over close. I can smell her perfume. Start to kiss the back of her neck. Blow in her ear. She looks over at me and says,
"What are you thinking?"
Gosh, I don't know. What are you thinking? She goes,
"I was just thinking that if we fold the dish towel smaller..." "They will fit more efficiently into the kitchen drawer."
That is exactly what I was thinking. Let's go do it now. Maybe while we're up, I can spackle. And then into the relationship came the children. We had 4 babies. Somehow.
Spackling accident.
And that changes everything. I learned so much. I learned they separate pregnancy into 3 things called trimesters. And the reason they're called trimesters is because during that time, the husband tries to mester up the strength. to stay in the house with a pregnant woman. The first trimester, 2 cells come together, form a tiny human being. The second trimester, that tiny human being begins to grow. And then the third trimester, the pregnant woman changes from a human being into a Tasmanian devil. And so I come in the front door and she's hey, where's the cat? And it was at that moment in my life when I realized this is not the same girl that I married. This is not the same species that I married. After just a couple of years of marriage, you start to see sides of each other that are kept hidden when you're dating. When we dated, she never devoured small domesticated mammals. I would have remembered that. At the same time, there's parts. There's parts of becoming a new father that aren't completely terrifying. Kind of heartwarming. Like when she was about 6 months along into the first pregnancy, she developed this intense desire to learn everything she could about becoming a mother, carrying children, raising children. Because it was our baby. It was my baby. And she wanted to do it perfectly.
This is your baby, John. Living inside of me. Sucking the life out of my organs like a parasite. Making me bloat like a fish on the beach. Doing backflips on my bladder all because of you. My love.
So she went to the library, she got books on the subject, she checked out videotapes, she subscribed to magazines. So by the time the babies arrived, we were perfect parents. She, because of months of loving maternal research, and me by default. Because I had her to explain everything to me, all the stuff I had to know. Like trading off feedings in the middle of the night, baby'd cry, and she'd nudge me,
John, baby's crying. Do you hear that crying, baby? That is your baby. The book says that daddy should take a turn feeding for bonding. So bond!
So I would stumble down the hall into the kitchen looking for bottles, and then it would occur to me, hey, we're breastfeeding. This is going to hurt like a monkey. And in the midst of all of it, in the midst of unanswered questions and confusion of roles and kids flying around the planet, in the middle of all the chaos, I'm still expected to be
romantic.
She will appear from nowhere.
Take me someplace. Take me someplace nice.
All right, where do you want to go?
I don't want to tell you where to take me. Ruin everything. You have to think of some place to go.
Yeah. So I got tickets to the tractor pull. That was wrong. We have so many friends whose cummerbunds match the flowers, match the dresses, and they march down the aisle. They took a vow until death do us part. And then they parted. And they weren't dead. I think love takes longer than that. It takes a lifetime. It takes a whole lifetime to learn what really annoys them. so you can do it again and again and again. If you stick with it, eventually you'll zero in on the source of conflict. You'll figure out what it is that causes the two of you to fight. Lori and I did. It's me. I remember the first fight that I caused. It was right after we got married. And I wanted to go out with the guys, you know, just me and the guys, like we used to, for old time's sake. And she wanted me to stay there with her and cut the cake and throw the bouquet. And even now, sometimes she'll get me backed into a corner, maneuvered, so I can't escape. And she'll say, "John, listen, sweetie, I was just reading in Cosmo." Cosmo, great. Bring it on.
"If you could start all over again, if you could wipe the slate clean..." Hey, look at me. This is important. "If you could start all over again and wipe the slate clean, start afresh, would you get married again?"
The speed with which you answer that question is as important as the answer itself. And the truth is, after 21 years, the answer to that question is yes. I would marry the exact same girl again. Because what I've learned over these years is that the two of us together are somehow better than the sum of the individual parts. And she is so many things I could never be. And I'm so many things that she doesn't want to be. It's complementary. We haven't mastered it. We're still learning, both of us. I'm learning that she's like a flower with infinite petals. And each petal is a little more complex and a little more lovely than the petal that preceded it. And it's going to take a lifetime to examine every subtle nuance, every tiny little facet of her personality that makes her unique and special, different from all the rest, and beautiful. And she's learning that every guy on the planet is exactly the same. You might as well just stick with me, baby. That's all there is. I know her better than I know anybody else on the planet. She's my other half. I know her favorite color. I know how she looks in the morning. I know her shoe size. I know how she cooks. Beep, beep, beep. I know how she drives. Wow. She's got this motto:
"Well, we pay for insurance, we might as well use it."
She does stuff with insurance I could never do. She hit a deer. She once hit a deer that was already dead in the middle of the... Tore the running board off the car, knocked the wheels all out of alignment. She was so upset.
"I'm sorry, Johnny, didn't hit him on purpose."
I didn't get mad. I couldn't get mad. Because you know those deer crossing signs by the road? They always show the deer like this. It never shows them like this. And late at night on long trips, when I'm driving, she'll sit up front with me and she'll go,
"Well, it's late at night on a long trip. You're probably pretty tired, aren't you? Because it's late at night on a long trip. So I'll just sit up front with you and keep you company, help you stay awake."
5 miles down the road, she's sound asleep. So this is what I do. Pull into the first rest park that I come to where the semis are idling with their lights on. Pull nose to nose with the semi. Throw the car in neutral, hit the gas, and go, "Ah!" But you know what happened after the wedding cake was eaten and the flowers wilted, all the thank yous have been sent out? After that, after the wedding, then real life settled in. And real life, I mean, day-to-day life is hard and it's mundane and it doesn't feel the way it feels when you're planning a big wedding. It doesn't feel the way it feels when you're dating. Someday it doesn't feel like it's worth it. And every time those feelings come over me, I have these memories of my great-grandparents, great-grandpa Frank, Mamie. When we were little, we'd go over to their house, my brother and I, and great-grandpa Frank would sit in a big overstuffed chair by the window. We'd stand right in front of him, and he'd lean forward in that chair and talk with his hands and tell us all the stuff that little boys are supposed to know. You know, he taught us how to bait a hook and cast a line so the big fish would hit. Taught us how to sit on the handlebars of our bikes and ride them backwards, downhill, with groceries. And all afternoon in the rocking chair right next to him was my great-grandmother, Mamie. She'd have her hands in her lap, and she'd rock back and forth and look over at him while he talked, and she'd shake her head and roll her eyes. And she would laugh at the same jokes that she'd heard him tell a billion times before. In the middle of a story, he'd look over, pat her on the knee, wink at her, jump right back in and never miss a beat. And as years went by, we started to notice that Mamie was having trouble remembering things like recipes that used to come from her heart, the names of the neighbors that lived right next door. So my great-grandfather's job became to just be with Mamie constantly. Make sure she didn't forget something important like unplugging an iron or shutting off the stove, but she got worse. And pretty soon she was more than he could handle all by himself. He was too old, so they had to move out of their house and into a nursing home. And I remember the time that we went to visit the nursing home, dinner time. Great-grandpa Frank sat across the table from Mamie. His plate sat over to the side, got cold, while he took one spoonful at a time from her plate, fed it to her. Then he'd smile at her, he'd wink, take a napkin, wipe her chin. Mamie couldn't use the toilet by herself. So every time she had to go, he'd take her in and help her with all of those responsibilities, every single time. And during all of those years when he was doing that, we never heard him complain. He never once snapped and said, you know what? I'm an old man, and I've had a long, tough life too, and now I can't even blink with Mamie around, because if I do, she may wander off, or she'll fall and hurt herself, and I have to feed her, I have to bathe her, I have to take her to the toilet. He never complained. Then there was a day that my brother and I went to visit, nursing home. Great-grandpa Frank sat in his big, overstuffed chair. He looked up at the two of us and said, you know, boys, and there was a tear right here. He said, Mamie doesn't know who I am anymore. And that was the first complaint that I ever heard him speak about his little bride. It didn't seem to bother him to be with her constantly. It didn't bother him to have to feed her and bathe her and take her to the restroom. What broke his heart was when all of those times were over. Two of them were married for 70 years, 70 anniversaries with the same person. And I am positive that after all of those decades, she was not the same girl that he married. She didn't look the same. They didn't do the things they used to do when they were young and strong. She couldn't even remember who he was. But there's no doubt that my grandfather was still crazy in love with her. Because love is not what you feel. Love is what you do.
What a touching way to end a rather lighthearted but big picture look at marriage on today's Focus on the Family as we've been listening to John Branyon.
Wow. That last line, I love it. He said, love is not what you feel, love is what you do. And in fact, the Bible puts it this way, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And that's out of 1 Corinthians 13:7-8. And what a wonderful example great-grandpa Frank is to all of us, to love his wife, to care for her, even when she couldn't recognize his face anymore. And that's true love.
Oh, it sure is. And it's so important to have those examples, those reminders of how we can rise above our circumstances and demonstrate that kind of true commitment and love. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
I really loved that last story John Branyon shared about his grandparents. It beautifully illustrated what God meant when he said we are to lay down our lives for our wives. The image of his grandfather's food going cold because he was too busy feeding his wife. That's sacrificial love. As John put it so well, love is not what you feel, it's what you do. The resource we're recommending today is Love That Laughs by Ted Cunningham. It's a wonderful reminder to be intentional, lighten up, and enjoy life together, because laughter really can lead to a more joyful, satisfying marriage. You can order your copy by calling us on 031-716-3300 or by visiting our website at safamily.co.za. And while you're online, why not sign up for our Focus newsletter? You'll get great marriage and parenting content, movie reviews from a family perspective, links to our broadcasts, and stay up to date with all that's happening here at Focus. I'm Graham Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa. Thanks for joining us today, and please tune in next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.